Welcome everyone to the Caribbean Science Fiction Network, a celebration of all things fantasy, folklore, speculative fiction, and of course, science fiction. Today I have with me from the US Virgin Isles, Celeste Rita Baker.
She actually ended up doing good in the world with her little stupid hobby. She ended up lessening the suffering of some of the people in her community, even though it was an unintended consequence of her hobby.
We'll be talking about her prize-winning short story, Glass Bottle Dancer.
It ended up, of course, having lots of commentary in it that are not the main subject of the story, but all of these things, the word interfere came to mind, but all of these things interfere in our lives, you know. So.
Celeste, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I've been so excited. I've listened to the episodes and I can't believe I'm on here with so many other illustrious writers. Thank you.
You're a Fantasy Award winner. Before we get into the particulars, give our listeners a synopsis or tell us about this story.
Okay, so the story is titled Glass Bottle Dancer. And it's about a middle-aged Caribbean woman who decides to do something silly just for fun. And she's a mother, she's a wife, she's a friend, and, you know, she has a full-time job. But she's like, I need to do something just for fun. She admires a lady in her town who just died at 106. And when our character, Mabel, looks at her, this lady that she admires, life, her name is Miss Aggie. She's like, she's a doer and not just a watcher. And I seem to be a watcher and I'm going to start doing something. So she takes up this ridiculous hobby, which she kind of makes up herself, of teaching herself how to dance on glass bottles. Not the shards, but the whole bottles. And she has to teach herself because it's a hobby or a style that has never been accomplished before. And when I was first started to write the story, I imagined her putting her toes inside the top of the bottle like a ballerina on point. But I couldn't really get that done like myself. Like I was like, I'm having a problem with that. So I decided to let her roll on the bottles. And that's what she does. And her family and the community around her and everybody is like, what stupidness are you doing? But she follows through with it. And she gets a chance to perform in a calypso tent. She does that. But unbeknownst to her, there are roaches in her backyard who have been watching her as she goes out at night to practice. And they decide they're going to do something just for fun also. So they follow her into town on the day of the big show. And they perform at the end of her show behind her by floating up in the air as a flamboyant tree. And then again, as their own selves, which is a roach. So in the end, she ends up being what they call in her town, the roach lady, in that she can dance and attract the roaches out of your home and lead them up into the hills where they actually do belong. They don't belong in the homes with us. They belong up in the hills because that is their job in nature, is to nurture the soil. So it was the ending was unexpected for me too.
Yeah. So where did this come out from, like glass bottle dancing? How, I mean, I'm Googling glass bottle dancing and nothing really coming up. So what was the inspiration for this story?
That is exactly the point. She wanted to do something new and something different, some hobby that she could take up that she had never heard of before. So I tried looking up glass bottle dancing because I figured somebody had to have been doing that already, you know? Mm. But I couldn't find anything really, you know? So I was like, yeah, this is a good hobby for her.
You mentioned taking it up as a hobby. And I don't want to take away from the fun aspect, from the lightheartedness. But from your perspective, were you trying to get at anything beneath the surface of the glass bottle, or is it, or, you know, should we just accept it as that, as entertainment?
Yeah, I really wrote it as a fun, silly, little, happy, lighthearted story. Yeah. But of course, everything is political. Everything is social, you know? So yeah, it ended up, of course, having lots of commentary in it that are not the main subject of the story, but all of these things, the word interfere came to mind, but all of these things interfere in our lives, you know? So, so yeah, they come up.
You mentioned interference, and in this story, you know, it's such a humorous thing to see Mabel going organizing these bottles, and then something happens, and then something happens, and then someone comes along, her youngest daughter. So we have all these simultaneous events happening, and it really reminded me of just a Caribbean way of life. I mean, we have all these stimulants, and everything is happening at the same time. And you know, I just wanted to ask you, as a Caribbean person, did you see that as necessary to portray, or did it just come naturally to you?
It just felt very natural to me because we have so many things in our life, you know? You're a parent, you're an employee, you're a spouse, you're a friend, you're a possibly a volunteer, you know? you're an alcoholic, you know? We are so multifaceted, and there is so much of it that goes, that does interfere in your own little dream of your own little joy bringing parts of your life. So yeah, it's not necessarily Caribbean. It's, to me, it's universal. Like we have so much going on.
We must talk about language, and you know, and the mother tongue, as people call it. It's very much present in this story. And you know, I want to ask you, did you always set out to write in this way? And why was it important for you to do this as someone from the Caribbean?
It just happened that the stories that I started writing, they just felt more natural. They came to me more naturally. The stories were easier to write. I liked the characters better. Everything was more fun. The first story that I got published was in the Caribbean Writer. It's called The Dream Price. And it's also like in a comedic tone and dialect. And when that story was accepted by the Caribbean Writer, which I didn't even realize how prestigious they were, because, you know, it's published by the University of the Virgin Islands, American Virgin Islands. And to me, they were just down the road. So I didn't figure that they were as instrumental in the Caribbean literary scene as they were. And to get accepted by them for writing in dialect, a funny story, was really encouraging for me. I do write in standard English sometimes, and I'm getting better at liking my standard English stories, but to me, dialect is just a lot more fun to write, and it's more fun to write, and for me, it's more fun to read. The first time I saw it was in Merle Collins' book Angel. And the whole book wasn't written in dialect, but there were long passages of dialogue and sections. And I just held the book to my chest and almost started crying just to be able to hear myself in paper, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm appreciative now that so many people are accepting of being able to read people the way they want to write.
I feel we should also mention where listeners can read this story, Glass Bottle Dancer. It's in the Lightspeed magazine. And also, we must talk about the award for Best Short Story. So talk to us about what it meant for you to have this story published in Lightspeed magazine, and also to just be recognized in this way.
I wrote a story called Single Entry, which was in dialect. It's about the planet Earth participating in a carnival parade. And it was published by Moco Magazine. Moco Magazine, you know Moco, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was wonderful to be to have this story accepted in Lightspeed, but it was not the first time that my stories in dialect have been published by people who normally publish standard English only. So they published this story about the Earth participating in a carnival parade, and it was seen by a Caribbean writer and editor by the name of Tanya Trisha Liebert from, at the time she was with Abyss and Apex. So she asked me for a story for Abyss and Apex. And I wrote a story she called Name to Calling, which is also people in dialect and door sci-fi fantasy. That are not necessarily about a woman who, and anyway, she gets into a position where she has to bring her, she has to kill, although she doesn't really kill them, but she has to kill her best friend and she can't do it and she's having a blockage. Anyway, so that story was published in Abyss and Apex. And when I first sent the story to them, it was in much, quote, thicker dialect. And they asked me to water it down. And I felt like, oh my God, here they're telling me to put ice in the rum. But I did it, you know, but I didn't take it like all the way down. Certainly didn't get to standard English. So what happened was they published the first version and the watered down version side by side and asked for readers' comments verse on the subject of authenticity versus clarity. So that was really interesting, you know, and a lot of people that I had always admired championed my, quote, right to write in the way that I wanted to. Another story that got a lot of recognition was a story called The Mother Jumpers, which is also in dialect and it's also sci-fi fantasy. And it's about people who jumped overboard during the Middle Passage into the Atlantic and have created a society for themselves under the water. So they've been under the water for like most 400 years, you know? And there's a faction of the young people in this society now that think that they are hiding under the sea. And they want to come up and live on land. And so, because you know, young people always want change, right? So So they're you know, going to this a reef that they found where they practice breathing above water and standing up and stuff like that. And then there's a, well, okay, so then there's a horrible attack by a mutant manatee, and the women, the young women of childbearing age, are like almost all wiped out. There's only one left. And so the big thing now is to like, this one survivor has to, they feel that she, many people in her society feel that she owes it to them to provide children for them so their society can go on to live. And so, okay, those are a couple of them, my most prevalent stories that have been published by standard English publications. Mm-hmm. That have been accepted by non-Caribbean readers.
At one point in the story, there are references to the governor, there's reference to recycling, and I couldn't pass up asking you, these references to recycling, do you see the story touching on those ideas, or did you want to say something to us in terms of the idea of glass bottle dancing as dangerous, or was it you know, just Mabel doing her thing?
A, it's Mabel doing her thing, but B, it's also, I'm noticing that I often throw in references to the environment and to climate change and to somewhat recycling, but like what we're doing to the planet. Mm-hmm. And I don't get too serious into it because there are so many other more brilliant, more well-informed writers who do justice to the subject with the gravity that it deserves. But I don't want to leave out things that are always on my mind. I was going to say always on our mind, but obviously they're not working in everybody's mind. But, you know, like these things we deal with on a constant basis, whether we are really aware of it or not. So when it comes to me through the story, I put it in, even if I don't go into a sermon about it.
Well, you mentioned the Calypso tent earlier on, where Mabel goes to perform this dance. There was a line where it says the soda does fly out and go up the noses of the people who are doing evil. I just wanted to ask you about this part of the story, where it talks about the sort of song that creates this possibility of going up in noses. What was this about?
Think about all the rugudu that has been started with calypso, right? Mm. You know, this is I mean, through song, when we basically cuss each other out, expose each other's bad behavior. Okay,
yeah.
So even though hers, hers wasn't in song, but, and it was only in her imagination, you know, because she felt that, like, she worked for Consumer Affairs, where she's supposed to be helping to monitor the way the shopkeepers manage their goods and how they send their nearly expired goods and expired goods to the poor part of town, whereas the rich part of town, blah, 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 gets, you know, the better cut of everything. And she does this repeatedly to the same supermarkets and markets. And it feels hopeless, like so many of the things that we do in our daily work lives. You know, even when we're going to the helping professions, you know, we get stymied by administration and bureaucracy and capitalism and all the rest of it. And even though Mabel does not want to physically hurt people. She does want consequences for their bad behavior. And so this is just some fantasy that she has while she's dancing. That's the kind of thing that Mabel is wishing for when she's talking about shoving the soda up the nose.
Now, we're coming to the end of the chat, but we have to talk about the ending. Here have these cockroaches, and me, afraid of cockroaches, reading this story. I'm like, okay. What was the idea for this?
It was really crazy for me because I don't like roaches neither. And I had to do research on roaches to figure out, so that I could find out, what was their redeeming qualities, why are you here, And so, yes, it was the ending was a mix of the roaches, too, just want to have fun, but also that it was a way for Mabel to, she actually ended up doing good in the world with her little stupid hobby because now, I lived in Harlem for 30 years and they have a huge, we Black people in America have a huge problem with asthma. I'm not sure if we have it to that extent here in the Caribbean, but in the congested areas in the States, it definitely is a problem. And part of it, of course, it's, have many, many contributing factors, but one of them is the pesticides that we use to control roaches and ants. And so we need to get away from, Mabel was able to get that, the use of those poisons away from her community by being able to lead the roaches away. And so she ended up lessening the suffering of some of the people in her community, even though it was an unintended consequence of her hobby.
Celeste, in Rock, Feather, and Shell, you mentioned there's one part that mentions the leavening day. And it kind of connects to the hurricane, the experience of hurricane, escaping the hurricane. And I wanted to ask you if, while you were writing this story, images of the impact of Hurricane Maria and Hurricane Irma, what was that like for you in terms of the actual reality going on in the Virgin Islands?
The images of living through a hurricane did influence me a lot. I was not home for Irma and Maria. I was not home for Marilyn, but I was home for Hugo, which was 1989. And I'm still traumatized by it, I don't know. I know we have so many discussions about climate change. And I do feel that these monstrous hurricanes, which used to come every 100 years, are now much more frequent. I don't know what we, the Caribbean community, or even we, the rank and file people of the world, can do about it. So the leveling day, it was a way for us to escape the things that we could not control. And it was in my mind, it was kind of like CARICOM, all got together and sent all their best, brightest minds who had these powers, who could lift their individual islands up. And then we joined together and escaped.
What was the inspiration? What was it like for you? What images you kind of associated with it before you created it?
The story was built on a Bible that was put together by four other writers. Tonya Liebert, I'm so sorry, I'm blanking out, but the names will come back to me. And so they were four of us, and we built up a Bible of things that we wanted to include in a story. We would each write a story based on this Bible. So this is my story for it. And the things that we decided to include was the ability to levitate our lands, the ability to have people who were assigned, I don't want to say special powers like DC Marvel superpowers, but powers that individually benefited the community. It was your assignment to make sure that the people in your community were healthy. It was your assignment to make sure that the people in your community learned this subject, you know? So we had this elaborate educational system. We had like elaborate food systems, and so each person built a story off of that. So that was my
gotcha. I'm curious. Is this part of the Caribbean Sky Islands project? Because I'm having Fabrice for those listeners here. Yeah,
Fabrice. Yes, Fabrice initiated it. Yes, mm-hmm. Fabrice. Yes, and his story is about. Well, I ain't gonna tell you the whole thing, but of course, you know, has to do with mangoes, you know, and anyway, the power of the desire to save one person and how that impacts so many other people.
So now this gets us into a nice segue into one of your other stories, which is Mango Fire. What's the creative process like in terms of the mango? And how do you connect that to what happens in the story?
I would say the mango and the title came later on as I was describing the power of the mother to calm and soothe her child. And that is where the mango breath idea came from, and the sweetness that you can experience if you are lucky, if you have a good mother. But the genesis of the story is I think I was feeling angry and helpless and recognizing that sometimes we are attacked and we lose. We fight. Yeah. But we sometimes lose. And we don't see enough of that in stories. You know, the bad guy loses, you know? But like when you are being attacked for just being who you are and you lose. And we see so much of that in present day. And I'm sure it has gone on all the time. But very much now so, we see so many people under attack for being whoever they are. And so that I didn't want to speak of people in particular. So that's why I got with the dragon images and the fact that it was a way for me to describe what was happening to entities that have no control over your own being, you know, but here you are being persecuted to the point of death. The retribution, you know, that like it, yes, you lost. We lost this fight, but our spirits and our ancestors have not forgotten, will not forget. Our living people have not forgotten and will not forget. And there will be problems. There will be repercussions.
I like the imagery of the dragon breath and the mango breath. That's a really compelling image to think about.
Well, I think the mother was trying to say, pick your time, pick your place, you know? You can't win every battle, but make sure you know when to strike, and when you strike, strike hard and fast.
We talked about your award-winning story. We talked about some of the more recent works, but can you give us anything without saying too much? What's the next chapter?
So right now, I have been challenged to write some noir-ish stories, some noir, grim, gritty. And my work recently has been much more whimsically fantastical. you know. So now I have to turn my brain into telling some underbelly type stories, you know.
Yeah.
So I have two of those that I'm I have the opportunity to write. And then I'll probably get back to being more silly again.
Okay, we're looking forward to it. We like the silly, and we're looking forward to the seriousness. Let's see what happens. So Celeste, we're at the end of the chat, but I want to ask you to leave us with something, to leave our listeners with anything as a science fiction writer, as a Caribbean person. Anything about the story or anything in general?
Anything in general. Every tongue got a story, and write yours. Who knows what might happen?
So, Celeste, I want to thank you again for doing this.
Thank you so much. It was really fun talking to you.
And to everyone listening, thank you for staying tuned to the Caribbean Science Fiction Network. Bye.